Hey, welcome to This Adventuring Life, a podcast where we interview regular game masters and players to see what's going on in the world and how the tabletop role-playing community is doing. My name's Dave. Let's get the show on the road. Matt.
Hi.
Tell me about yourself. Like, how much D&D do you play? Is it always D&D? Like, right now, what are you roped into?
Short answer, too much. Let's just go down the week. We'll start the week on Monday. Like once a month on Monday, I have a game that I run at home with, you know, my fiance, her brother, and a couple other friends. Right now, we're currently running Shattered Obelisk. Started off as Lost Mines, but then Shattered Obelisk was released. I was like, hey, why not? They're not even at the part, so it doesn't even change anything.
Exactly, I was going to say, it works out pretty good.
So, testing that out Tuesdays. Right now, we're a little bit back and forth changing, some transitioning happening there, but for the past couple of years, I've been in a consistent weekly Tuesday game down in Mass, full homebrew campaign, works to high level, very much homebrew. DM owns the game shop we play at, is actually like written for Wizards of the Coast. Exactly know what, but been transitioning a little bit with that because, you know, found your group a couple years ago, tried it out, and then timing got off and I've been able to get back to it. But I also like learned that I value sleep during the week. So coming home on Tuesday, so on to the Tuesdays, work full day as a teacher. Run an after-school D&D club for students, then go play D&D for hours and get home probably around 11:30 to turn around and go back to school again. So I've learned that I like sleep.
Driving down to Mass isn't conducive.
Oh, no. My ride's about an hour and 10 each way.
Yeah.
So that's up until Tuesday. My fiance was running a game occasionally once a month. And then Fridays, I actually do a Eberron game with a couple friends that I actually met right at the beginning of pandemic when Roll20 came back out, hardcore and full on. Did like a looking. I'd gone back into D&D a little bit, you know, played a little bit around. Like, oh my god, what am I doing? You know, to the point where I was going to forums to see how spell slots works. I'm like, you know, it just makes sense. You use one, it's gone. It took me like weeks to figure that out.
It makes you feel better, though. There's still people who can't figure it out.
I mean, I was lost on how advantage worked. It took me like a week to figure out, oh, I rolled two dice. And I don't know how I couldn't figure that out, but I was that person. So I was on Roll 20, just like, you know, doing random pickup games, like playing with the characters, whatever. I didn't really know what I was doing. But then I found this group, and we did Icefire Peak.
Nice.
And I've been playing with that group ever since. You know, we've met in person a couple times. Most of them were friends. You know, I kind of joined. We did like every Wednesday, we did a one shot or something, like one shot Wednesday or random things. We did Icewind Dale. We've done Ice Spire. We've done Radiant Citadel just over time. So one of the guy that I actually initially posted the game for Ice Spire about a year ago, we just actually had our 1 year anniversary of the game. Thank you. We just hit level 6 last night or Friday, but we did an Eberron, but he wanted to do like a full on live stream of it. So we've been doing that. And
how do you like live streaming versus how do you feel the differences for a live stream versus like sitting around the table versus casually having it on, you know, playing over Roll20?
So me, I like at the table. I'm a people person. I'm a social person. So being on the table is better for me, or like my preference. Like my Tuesday game, I've actually talked to a couple of people. There's been like some hiccups in the game, you know, like the direction, things like that. And we've discussed in a couple different times that as a group to hang out as friends, we're cool. As a D&D group, not so much.
Yeah, there's also something about like being able to look people in the eye when you do stuff, especially if you're trying to read the room or figure out what's going on.
Yeah, and the caveat to that is like it's a large group. At one point, I think we had like around 18 to 20 people at the tables for one game.
That's crazy. How do you even manage that?
So the DM relies a lot on like role play, and it's kind of everybody doing their own little thing, but it's when I'm trying to have a conversation with, you know, person A, trying to have a conversation with person A, and you have person DDF trying to talk to you at the same time. It's like, yeah, yeah. Hello, like talking, like the social norms just kind of go out the window.
And, yeah, I feel like at that point too, you're practically LARPing, which isn't bad, but like,
no.
It's a different, it's a very different game.
But then you'll see like the DM like over on his computer doing whatever, and it's like, okay, you need to kind of direct this. So yeah. it's player driven to the point where it's everybody, like every character has their backstory, every character has their story, their shtick, their objective. But when each individual person, each like every single person of those 20 is all trying to run the game for their own good, it doesn't work. And then the DM doesn't take any charge of it, it gets even more difficult.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's you're not there. It's okay. It's going to be all right.
Yeah. It's just like, can we get a little direction here? Or it's, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is interesting when you have a table that big. I know the biggest table I ever had the pleasure, I guess, of running was 12 people. And there was a lot of like pseudo legendary actions that were happening in combat.
Okay.
Because you know how like when you do Dungeons and Dragons, there's a lot when you're DM, you know, when you're running a Dungeons and Dragons game or most games really, the narrator sets the scene and then the players all kind of stand there and like look at you.
Yeah.
And I found that in the tables that I run to a lot of newer players, and so I have these moments where like I'd say, you know, this orc covered in tattoos and scars and holding a maul walks into the bar and looks right at you. What do you do? And the whole table just kind of sits there and kind of waits.
Yep.
And so like, nope, combat's really fine. Nice that's for that sort scene. Of thing because you can... I'm sorry?
I was like, nope, that's the scene.
But it's like, combat's really nice because you can get everyone into like this initiative order, but it means that once you go, you can go get a cup of coffee at a Starbucks and come back, and it's still not your turn yet.
Oh, I know that all too well.
And so those big tables can be super frustrating because just to get anything to happen.
Yes, yeah. We were in combat once, and you know, I guess you could almost break the group up into like, I won't say cliques, but smaller groups, like. Like, if you were to walk, like in Mean Girls, you walk and you could identify the cafeteria by table people.
Yeah, yeah.
Similar like that, but, like, you had, like, it was me and a couple others that, like, we played together for a couple of years. We've known each other. We became friends. Like, our characters are pretty involved with each other in friendships and relationships, like, you know, connections. We had one combat, one session. We timed it. It was 40 minutes, 40 to 45 minutes between turns.
That's gross.
So like it would be my turn. It wouldn't be my turn again for another 45 minutes. And I was towards the end of the line because with a large group, we didn't do initiative. It was like, okay, we'll go around the room. The monsters are inserted at, you know, random spot.
Yeah, yeah.
With that, it was still 40 minutes between turns.
I mean, oof.
It is nope. So, and then it goes back to the everybody's talking and nobody's paying attention. So nobody knows it's their turn. It's like, oh, well, what's happened? What am I doing? It's like, okay, we're level 12. How do you not know what your character can do yet?
I know. But also, like, I know at the library, I've printed out a lot of character sheets.
Yeah.
And what I like to do is I like to take everyone's spells and print them out onto pieces of paper. Because nothing is more infuriating than someone saying something like, I want to cast Moonbeam. And then I go, cool, what happens? And they go, I don't know. And I go, what do you mean you don't know? I mean, it's one of those things that comes up.
Yeah.
All right, question for you. Of all the games that you're in, how many of them are you running?
I run my Lost Mine or Shattered Obelisk.
Yeah.
Actually, it's kind of to input this and to kind of circle back to the original question of, like, you know, what am I involved in? How much, you know, am I playing? I am part of a few, you know, Discord-based play-by-posts servers.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah.
So I guess the question is never ending is what I'm involved in. But I have two servers that are like, you know, West March. We have multiple cities, our own world that's been created. So I have two of those where it's like a whole community of people. And then I have two that are actual like campaigns that me and a few friends that I met through playing actually do so. I have Dragonlance that I run, and then I have I'm part of a Drakenheim campaign.
And those are play by post.
Those are play by post.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it'd have to be. There's so many hours in a day.
Yeah, and it's so like one of my like West March servers gets a lot more attention because I'm also like a chief DM, chief god. Like we are creating, you know, content for the world as we DM. Me and a couple of us, because we run a couple of the factions. So it's, but currently running, I guess you could say 2.5.
All right, it's pretty. I mean, 2.5 and a handful of casual play by posts.
Yeah. And then being involved in other games right away and
what. Yeah, no, there's plenty.
I like DMing. I don't mind it at all.
No, good. I mean, that's the whole point, right? I say that of like, I know there's a few people out there who think of DMing as like the thing that someone has to do.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be.
I mean, no.
You're a player too. That's kind of the whole fun of it.
Yeah. And that's like my fiance runs Stormwreck Isle, and she was asking me about it. And, you know, at one point we had talked about like me picking up, and she was like, no, I want you. And, like, she goes, I want you to play. Like, you always DM, you're always doing it. I want you to play. I was like, oh my God, thank you.
Yeah, right. So I guess one of my questions I have, which I think ties in real nicely here, is what is it about DMing that really draws you in as opposed to playing?
I like kind of, I don't want to say driving the story because the players really do, but like just, I like to see how people react. I like the interaction that players do and kind of, you know, get involved with, but I also kind of like being the mischievous one. Like, you know, I like playing around. Like if I'm behind the DM screen and people are just RPing and I just like roll 4 random dice and they all stop and look at me, I like having that smile on my face. So it's a little, you know, mischievous and sadistic, but I don't know, something about driving the game or like driving the story and like creating it for people to enjoy is what I like. And depending, I like kind of getting in the role of the NPCs or putting the music to the game. Like I like creating that.
Like world building stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure. What do you think your biggest inspiration is? Like a book series, movies, fantasy of old?
I would honestly say World of Warcraft.
All right.
I know it's not a direct alignment with D&D, but just the way the world is, you could, like, multiplayer roleplay, like, you create something you like, and you become part of the world, you shape the world, and even though in WoW it's like, oh, here's my backstory, it's like, but you could play off like that, and just kind of... You can really do anything. There's quests, there's side quests, there's little things, but you can, in an open world, you can do whatever. And I like the fantasy-based stuff. So WoW was always, and always will, kind of have that special place in my heart. You know,
nice, because, well, whenever someone says orcs, you like, you know what an orc, you're like, orcs, yeah. I got this.
Yep. Yep, I know that. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the content, like as a DM that I, you know, do, like, I draw inspiration from that. I know in one of my servers, my retired character, former character, is, like, the Lord Commander of the, like, Sacred Knights, which is, like, our Paladin faction.
Oh, nice.
And we're creating kind of that anti-faction, so we drew a lot of Scarlet Crusade material. And, like, Lich King or stuff like that, and just shaped it to fit our setting. But it's, like, because I look at it, it's like, why am I trying to reinvent the wheel? Content,
yeah, you know, exactly.
Reshape it to how I need, and I still love the lore of Warcraft, so it's, you know, kind of keeps, I don't play anymore.
Well, there's also something to be said about if the people you're with also know the lore, it's like a fun Easter egg to find.
Yeah.
Kind of that, and it helps kind of bring everyone together. If you're like, oh, your character doesn't know these people, but out of character, it's just like this. And they're like, oh, of course.
Oh, absolutely. I drop Easter eggs with that all the time. Where there's pop culture reference. There's things like that. A few of us made a couple Star Wars ones a couple quests ago.
That's fun.
I don't know. Did you ever watch the Kenobi series on Disney?
No, but tell me about it. I live under a rock as far as like media is concerned.
Well, it was just the whole, you know, Inquisitors looking for him. And a lot. I can't remember the line exactly, but basically, like, the Jedi can't help things. Like, their compassion gets in their way. Like, they always are drawn to do something good, so that's how they draw them out. And it's like, with the Scarlet Crusade, we kind of use that of they're looking for someone in particular. So we kind of recreated the scene around it, and everybody was like, wait a second, hold on. Like, the moments, it's just, oh, okay, you got it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say definitely inspiration from, like, World of Warcraft, like some Lord of the Rings.
I feel like Lord of the Rings is iconic. Like, don't get me wrong.
Not like, to get money, like, yeah, to add the cliche one in there. Oh, yeah, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I mean, Lord of the Rings is so... Lord of the Rings is one of those things where I feel like every time I ever ask this question, someone's going to be like, Lord of the Rings. And it's like, come on, halflings are hobbits. They literally had to take out the Balrog and put in the Balor because they got sued by Tolkien. Tolkien, whatever his name is. It's very clearly, you know,
And what did they do? They created a Lord of the Rings RPG.
It's true. I mean, at the end of the day, though, you can't fault them.
No.
I mean, that's...
People want it.
Yeah. What is one of your most memorable tabletop moments? Could be online, could be as a player or a DM. Like, what is, when someone's like, what was the like coolest thing to ever happen at a table? Like, what was it?
I would say it actually happened in one of my Discord servers.
All right.
You know, the character that I was playing was a Minotaur Vengeance Paladin.
All right.
And because Theros had just come out, the guy just started getting big into it, like online, you know, doing all that. He was my baby. Still is. I currently play his daughter now. if you can imagine a Minotaur Vengeance Paladin who's the commander of the faction whose daughter is a gnome. We had a whole adoption thing.
I was just going to say, part of me was like, I don't want to know. But part of me was like, I kind of want to know.
Yeah, so whenever I introduce her into a scene, it's like, oh yeah, no, my father's this. And just, I don't say anything else and just, I let everyone know. But his story arc conclusion.
All right.
Like his whole story ending that led him into retirement or to what the server thinks his death. we left that open.
Yeah,
but it was one of the DMs on the server is phenomenal. Like, we wanted to actually take the quest, edit it to the point, like creating a book out of it.
Yeah,
it was so a few of us who are we're all still close in the server and our characters are too. You know, we're talking like a 2+ year campaign almost.
Yeah,
just us in a server of, you know, one shots and little things like that. His arc ended where the big bad, you know, it turned into a server-wide raid type of deal. And
especially for a server that does play by post, I mean, that
would be the ideal. I don't think I could ever pull it off. I don't know how the ins and outs works, but they pulled it off and it was phenomenal. But what happened is, you know, you take your turn, you do your attack, and then like you know, you end your turn. And it's not so much an initiative, it's like a phase that everybody goes in.
It's not unheard of. Second edition had essentially phase combat, where like, the players would go and the bad guys would go.
Yep, it was basically that. So then what happened is we're like a day or two in this creature's taking a beating. Everybody's doing their thing. I think my character went down at one point, but everybody's like, "Oh no, we need to get him up." so I'm at work one day and I get a PM on Discord from the DM who had been running the whole thing for us to begin with.
Yeah,
and I get a message that says, "Yo, take your turn. He's almost down." And I'm like, "Okay, middle of class."
You're like, "I'm at work."
It's like, "Hold on, read chapter, or whatever." So I go and do all his attacks, and out of 4 attacks, 2 are crits, and I still had 2 third level spell slots. I was like, "Smite!"
And, yeah, absolutely, you gotta.
And ended up, like, I'm, like, shaking doing the... Because I'm doing it on my phone. I'm, like, you know, my thumbs are going, like, I can't even think about it. And I hit the final crit with the smite. And I just see that the creature, the boss, it's like, critical, 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 critical. I'm, like, come on. And then the last one, it goes dead. Nice. And I'm, like, holy shit.
I mean, it's only been, like, what, 2 years in the making, right?
Yeah, so there was some contention of it because another player had attacked right after my attack had gone through and said dead. So there was some contention of who landed the killing blow.
Oh, come on. It's not like you guys are not going to share XP or whatever.
Well,
like...
it's that, and the DM was basically like, we're giving it to him because this is the perfect ending for his character. And I was only level 15.
I mean, only. A lot of people don't get that far. Don't forget.
Well, this was, like, again, years in the making.
Yeah.
So they gave it to me, and I'm like, okay, school's about to end. I'm driving home. Give me a couple hours to write this up.
Yeah.
But ended up writing it up, and, like, it took, like, a couple posts, because you know how, like, Discord has, like, the character limit?
Yeah.
I hit 3 max character writing. But it's, like, I'll have to send it to you, because the read is incredible. Like, how I kind of put it together, and, like, a couple friends helped me with it, and, like... But then, so does all this heroic ending, rids the world of the evil, blah, blah, blah. But then I kind of pull a little bit of inspiration from Gladiator and Iron Man or Avengers, where he kind of gets like a image of like his friends and family and like his daughter is like, you can rest now. And then he just falls. And then we just fade to black.
I mean, he is a vengeance paladin. That's pretty much what keeps him going, right? Like,
yep. So the arc ended beautifully. Couldn't have like written it like that. So everybody's like, "You're not going to level 20." I go, "Why? I've completed his like I fulfilled the character. I don't need to hit 20. Like the character ended."
I was actually gonna ask. I was gonna say like, what convinced you to retire the character? Like when you are playing, what would be the thing that would push you to that?
I guess it would be relevant to the character. With him, with the characters that he always was questing with, they became a family. They did everything together. You know, like I was saying, like the characters had adopted children. The kids were best friends. So the character was the uncle to it kind of came that in this game. And it's they had been pursuing this evil for years.
Yeah.
Like whenever this DM would post up something, it would immediately come to us as first dibs to continue the quest.
No, that totally makes sense.
So it became their campaign. So kind of finishing it off in that way, it opened the door for them to kind of like step out. Like, we did it. We saved the world again. You know, this is our time. And it had been a couple of years. So it's like, you know, I wanted to try something new. The daughter character was an NPC in the game. So I was like, okay, let's take her now. Let's build her story. Like, she's developed enough. She's already got some stuff. She has a story.
Yeah.
Let's build into it. And, you know...
I will say it is refreshing to hear someone play the daughter of a character that wasn't because the character died and needed someone to avenge them.
Nope. She constantly brings... like, one of the characters she's with now is looking to join the faction. So she's like, oh, well, I'll bring you to dad. It's like, we'll get you right in.
Yeah, exactly.
So it keeps... We built the world. So we just... Now we're just taking a different view of it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And that's what I like about the play-by-post is because you're able to do that a little more fluidly than, like, at a table. Not that it's impossible, but a little bit easier.
What do you mean by fluidly? I say that just... I don't have a ton of experience with play-by-post. I've tried it, but... Because for me, for play... Like, if I'm playing a game, usually I have to, like, sit and dedicate some, like, energy to that.
Yeah.
And so having this, like, hey, don't forget to post for your turn. Like, I'm not going to remember what I did half an hour ago. I barely remember now. We were just talking earlier in this conversation about how annoying it is when you have to wait 40 minutes for your turn.
Yeah. And that's why I do like to play by post. But, like, with the fluidity of it, it's, like, let's take Shattered Obelisk, for example. Like, I have Phandalin. I have Kragmaw Castle. I have Wayback. Like, you have set locations. We have our cities. We have, like, 3 major cities. We have the areas surrounding it. But at any given time, with a community as large as it is, your character can branch off into stories. So they don't necessarily have to be in a quest to interact with people. We have, like, town RP, resident RP, you know, traveling roads roleplay.
Yeah.
So, like, at any given moment, my character currently is on a quest. But at the same time, she is in the inn doing different things with her friend. So there's a little bit of timey-wimey type of stuff, but...
Well, it's where you need to be for the story to make sense. It makes sense. Or it makes so as much sense.
Yeah. It allows the character to build. Like, it builds the connections. And so, like, you know, anything that happens in the world can apply in the quest, depending on the time scale. And it's you talk with the DM a little bit about like this happened, or oh, I just did this little thing and I gained experience and I leveled up, but I can't level up in the quest yet because it hasn't happened.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Type of thing. So it's able to broaden the character's view of things or experience when doing things.
When you're doing a West March like that, how do you guys manage all of the lore and all that stuff? Is there like a wiki or that sort of thing? I know in the past when I've run West March servers, we used OneNote.
Yep.
Which was, I mean, okay, I'll admit, it's a little like work-y, but the nice thing about Outlook is everyone has it. It's free to use and anyone can edit the thing and it's fairly easy to organize. I mean, but how do you guys do it?
So for the main West March I have, we'll have our main server, and then we actually have what's called, so the world is called Savantra, but we have our Savantra, Exit of Heroes. Like, you have our tables, we have downtime, roleplay, the arenas, the inns, the cities, general traps, like, you know, stuff like that. But then we have second server, which is like our office. So you have your chief DMs and admin, you have your guides. We split it off so that in one server is the game, the other server is kind of like the ins and outs, nuts and bolts type of thing, where we keep everything up to date. We talk about different content. There's a faction area where each faction has their own channel, so they can kind of consolidate everything in there and keep everything organized. So thankfully I'm not on that team, I'm just part of it.
Talk about a whole other job, holy cow.
And that's what we always say, and our number one rule is real life first.
Yeah, of course.
And it's, we actually had a discussion of it a couple weeks ago, like the server seems to be slowing down a little bit, or time between posts is, you know, increased, and a lot of us started, like, you know, inputting, like, you know, a lot of us are back to work post-COVID or whatnot. And, you know, everybody knows I'm a teacher. I don't really have the time in the day to do long posts or to read through everything. I don't even have that at night. So, like, it's just kind of that. And it's, you know, we were talking, like, you know, even with all the work that we do, and the people that do it are incredible. You can definitely tell work from home. But it's like, should we almost put in a thing where, you know, for a week, like, no admin work, that obviously certain things you keep going, but like everybody just be part of a game for a week, like just get back into it to find that, you know, want to do it, because there's a burnout.
Oh, no, for sure. I was actually just going to say, I feel like there's a real danger of having people burn out, especially because managing that much stuff, I mean, it sounds like a job. It sounds like a whole... I mean, I know until fairly recently, I have a game that's at the library. It's once a week, and it still feels like a job. I mean, I'm answering emails from people who are interested. I got a Facebook group of people who want to jump in and who want to post memes. And now I have this Discord server where I'm also the moderator, and now I have to do whatever. And it definitely will get to you if you don't.
There definitely needs to be a balance, and sometimes we have to remind people that this is a job and people are doing the best, but you also have to realize that people have their real life jobs.
Yeah, like we do this for free.
Yeah, and that's what it is. We are doing this for free. Like, we are doing the best. We get back to you.
Yeah.
We always say, like, in any kind of posts or any type of quest, we do a 48-hour rule. That way, because we understand people have lives.
Yeah.
So we respect that first and foremost.
No, of course, of course.
I mean, most of my channels, unless it's like, you know, one of the important, most of my servers or channels are muted.
I mean, that makes sense.
Unless it's directly pinging me, and even some of those I have muted, but just so that it's my, like, everything else is, this is not a priority, this is fun. Sometimes I get like, okay, I gotta stop looking.
All right, next question I got for you is, of all the DMing that you've done, what is the biggest, like, cringe learning moment that you ever had where you look back on it and you were like, wow, I was such a moron?
Or that would be
fun at all, or
my Icewind Dale campaign with some friends. I don't even need to think about this one. Icewind Dale campaign, and I ran my first Mind Flayer against the party.
All right.
and thinking, oh, this is when I was like the first campaign or module or anything, like my first time really DMing.
I mean, yeah, I feel like a lot of these, when I ask this question, I feel like almost all these are going to be right when people started, because I would be surprised if someone said the worst faux pas I ever made was recently.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This was definitely a learning experience.
Yeah.
So one of our players was not able to continue playing because of work stuff, all that. There wasn't anything like that. But so I did this like little runoff, like little one shot, like, okay, this is a good way to do it. You know, thought it on like
just for them or like,
what's that?
Like a one-on-one or was it like a,
like, no, like a
going away?
Just like a, it was a like one shot that I was able to kind of mesh into the character's departure.
All right.
Type of deal. Still not 100% sure how I did it.
That's all right. I'm not going to quiz you. I mean, yeah. It happened.
No, how I did it, like in terms of like made it make sense.
Yeah.
But it worked, like where the characters went to sleep and woke up in this kind of a nightmare, and they were in an arena, and like all this was like, and everything was randomized. And this was like, oh, random, you know, do it right on the spot.
Yep.
No. One player threatened to leave after because it was, essentially made my character a farmer, and he's very much a rules lawyer. So when I started randomizing, that didn't work to his character's favor. All hell broke loose. But we had one player who everybody loved. It was a female Goliath barbarian named Snoo Snoo, which it was just great. It was,
yeah,
it was gold. But then in that encounter, in the final boss, I got my first player kill because not even thinking, I used the gnome Ceramorph's extract brain. Not
that
thinking.
That will kill someone very quickly, yeah.
Yep, not thinking of that. And this was like, yeah, right, this was like right at the beginning. So I was like, okay, so now he's here for hours just not doing anything. And he had gone over to his friends to play. Like, we were all kind of... So, like, I had no clue what I had just done until I did it.
And yeah, I think that makes sense, where like it happens and then you're like, I've made a terrible mistake.
Well, that, and then one player, we start the whole thing, players wake up, but they find out that they're in a dream state and not looking that one character is an elf and can't be put to sleep magically. So it was just a total cluster of like, oh my God, what did I just do? So we scrapped that game and then we launched Icewind Dale 2.0. which ran a little bit smoother. And then timing-wise, we were running out. People were not as available, so we kind of put an end to it. We jumped to the big boss, and it was all fine. Yeah. You know, all's forgiven, but it was like, okay, that was probably the ugliest thing I could have ever done.
So riding on the coattails of that question, if you ran to someone who just started DMing today, or they said, I have a game coming up, my first ever game, what is the piece of advice you give them?
Prepare for the unexpected.
Well, how the heck do you prepare for the unexpected? It's unexpected.
But having been part of a lot of unexpected 2DMs, I've actually answered that question a couple times. I like to run the modules. I'm a very, like, not specifically by the book, but like I like direction. I like to have an objective, a guide of like, okay, we're heading here. We can sandbox a little bit.
Well, I also say there's something to be said for modules. I know a lot of people really love homebrew games. I've run a lot of homebrew games, but my homebrew games were more actually out of necessity.
Mm.
The library has a fairly notorious short window of play where it's about 2 hours.
Yep.
And the attendance isn't consistent, so you don't actually know who's going to be there.
Yeah.
I've tried to run a couple of modules, and the people who start the module are not always the same as people who finish the module, which makes it very confusing when you're trying to figure out, you know, what's supposed to happen next. But I will say, if there's anything about the modules, Wizards and the folks at DM's Guild usually have a pretty good idea of what makes an adventure.
Yeah, and I use DM's Guild a lot.
Guys know what they're doing. I mean, it's... I know it may not be everyone's cup of tea, but they really have dialed in of like, here's what a dungeon should be, and here's all the rooms, and they already interact with each other, and like,
yep,
really making it like kind of user-friendly.
Yep. Or it's like, you know, like the group that I run at home for Shattered Obelisk, all the players are brand new to the game. First time players, I think maybe one had played, but like not really.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we're going to run the module. I am not going to branch off. It is going to be step by step. So that way they, because, and I will say Lost Mines does a really good job of introducing certain aspects of the game in certain ways.
Yeah.
That is very much a learning experience, and that's what I wanted. And I was able to incorporate that with my DM style and everything, and everybody's picking it up. And, you know, we had a couple players where during combat, oh, looking through the character, like, oh, I can do this. I do this. And it's like, I fudged a little. I was like, that is actually really cool. We're going to say it works. You know, inspirations. And it's, instead of rewarding, like, oh, you figured this out, it's, you figured out something cool about your character.
Exactly.
So you reward that, and it builds that, like, I like this. But for preparing for the, and with DM's Guild, they do a really good job of, like, insert this into any campaign. And you can modify it to how, and they're really good with it.
Yeah, a lot of those adventures are just kind of like, hey, if you want to run this, just stick it somewhere. There'll be some quest giver, and there'll be some quest, and then you'll go do the thing, and you'll be, that'll be that.
So circling back to the question, it's for preparing for the unexpected, I think you have to know your group. You have to know what their brain is capable of, which is not always the easiest, so...
Yeah, I was just going to say... I barely know what my brain is capable of, so I don't know if you can like elaborate on that. This is something to be said about knowing the people you're playing with. I just also know that like sometimes that can be really hard. I mean, take the group you were talking about before, where you're all good friends, but then you all sit down to play and things kind of get kind of wonky.
So I have both done it to a DM and gone it done to as a DM. So in my Friday game, I run a goblin shadow sorcerer who's kind of like the mischievous one. You know, he's not evil, and that's his whole play is, but he's always in the setting they're in. He's always kind of looked down upon because he's a goblin.
Yeah.
And he knows that. He plays off of it. He mouths off like he is that character.
Yeah.
And there was one night or one game where, you know, we were on a train, you know, heading from one city to another, and the DM was like, there's some time passing. What are we doing? So he throws me this situation where it's like, because my character's shtick is like, he has a key ring with just random keys, and his goal is to find whatever key opens. Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So is it achievable? Probably not. But does it give the DM something to play with? Absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
The whole thing was the character was looking for the bathroom on the train, and he ends up opening a door and finds a lady without garments and everything. And that turned into an entire session. He goes, I was not prepared for that. I was like, well, you threw the situation at the one person who would take the bait.
Yeah, but also, I mean, I kind of joke about this. The DM did not have to have someone in the bathroom.
Exactly. So, like, the DM kind of, like, blames me, but it's like, no, you put the situation on the character who would take the bait. This is your fault.
Yeah.
So on the flip side of it, in our second game at the game I run, I mean, they were running Lost Mines, so they were on Goblin Ambush. They, you know, the whole beginning
that
scene.
That first encounter is brutal. I mean, if you run that first encounter from Lost Mines...
It's rough.
It's very rough.
And then going through the cave.
It works out better if you take that first encounter and run it as if you are a new game master... Like you just got the starter set and you're about to play, then you run it like that. There are four goblins just standing around, and then it's about right for a level one party.
Yeah,
yeah. If you're experienced and you're going to use guerrilla warfare,
yeah,
that level one party is going to either struggle or run. I mean, it can be done, but
especially players that have never played.
Yeah, exactly. I know one time. It was one of my first sessions at the library before COVID. It was one of my first sessions at the library. It doesn't matter. It was around COVID, but I think it was before. And this woman shows up. She rolls a bard, level one, and everyone goes into a tavern, because why not?
Yep.
And I had some thugs show up. I love thugs. Great stat block. But thugs have a D10 heavy crossbow.
Yep.
They don't have a lot of HP. They're meant to just kind of be just a bunch of commoners with heavy crossbows. But what ends up happening is we roll initiative. The thugs roll really high. the bard rolls really low.
Mm-hmm.
First attack, I shoot a heavy crossbow. I think it was a regular hit, but I rolled max damage.
Ooh.
And I think it outright killed this character. First roll of the first encounter. And obviously we retconned it because we were like, you pull up the script and you go, "That's they can't die. We just started. That's not how this works at all."
Yep.
And so it obviously worked out, but level one characters can really struggle. It's really meant to be the tutorial mode. That first encounter can be brutal.
Well, I mean, falling out of a tree at level one is terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, not always. You're at least going to have like 5 or 6 hit points, at least. I mean, you have to.
Well, I mean, a level one wizard is, what, 9 hit points?
Sounds I think. About right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if 9 is the lowest, you could take most hits.
Yeah.
You know, you could take 1. It's pretty much it. It's all you're guaranteed.
Level 1, it's like, I was like, oh, you interacted with this NPC? Welcome to level 2.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, although, you made it.
I'm a sucker for, do you use XP or milestone?
Well, like, the way Lost Minds is, it's like you start off as milestone, then you get into one chapter and it goes to XP, and it's like, okay, if I have XP and all these things are supposed to lead to this level, if I add in an encounter or I add in a supplement thing, how do I do that? Me, preferably, I prefer milestone a little bit because it's, you can set the milestones. Like, okay, level 1 to 2, complete this task. Level 2 to 3, complete 2 tasks. 3 to 4, 3 tasks. So you can play around with it a lot more. Because it doesn't matter what you're fighting, it's you have to complete it to achieve it.
There was a while where I ran the library games, and we had these people who were coming in. Right, we had like a bunch of regulars. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to reward the regulars. And I wanted the people who weren't regulars to have fun. But if you walk in, and you've never played Dungeons & Dragons before, and you're level 6, you're going to get so bamboozled.
Yeah.
There's so many things going on. Suddenly, paladins have auras that you got to keep track of. You have all these resources. You have all these spell slots. And you have all these, you know, people are turning into animals. And people are cashing in whatever the hell meta magic is.
Yeah.
Like, it can be very confusing. So what I did was, at the time, I said, let's try XP. Everyone will start as level 1.
Yeah.
And if you stay, you keep getting XP. And if you don't stay, you don't keep getting XP.
Makes sense.
And I'd have the most of the fights be, I just break it up by level and then just give a couple of bad guys per level, you know, group.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever got past level 5 or 4. So it ended up working out pretty all right. But it was one of those things where it worked because if you had a bunch of folks who are level 3 and a guy who's level 1 shows up, just being there when they give out the XP, he'll probably level up almost instantly. So it did catch up. Nowadays, I do milestone, and the only requirement I have is that everyone at the table knows all their class features.
Yeah.
And that sounds kind of mean, but I want people to know their character.
Yep.
At least well enough so that no one's surprised when something happens.
We had that in one of my play-by posts. We all started as level 3, but it took so long to complete that quest, and they have a modified version of experience, like however many encounters is 1 XP, length of quest 1 XP, like different ways of looking at it.
Yeah,
but like X amount of XP would equal a level.
That's an interesting way to do it.
I'll see if I can find the breakdown. It works for play by post. I don't know how it would transfer to tabletop or.
It probably work fine. I mean, the only thing about XP in the traditional sense is just that you get it from just about everything that you do.
Yeah.
And so, like, obviously giving XP for social encounters is kind of a crapshoot because there's no guideline.
Yep.
But giving XP for monsters just means that if you walk into a room of really easy monsters, then it's not really going to do anything for you because it should be easy.
Yeah.
In the same way of a lot of people joke about, like, murder hobos who would kill anything that lived so they could get the XP out of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know how much of a problem that is anymore, because I feel like the new, like, thing that's in right now is these really highly narrative games, like the play-by-post.
Yep.
And so, there's not so much of it, although, I mean, I've definitely run tables where you had to make sure everyone was well-protected from the party. I got a good question for you. How do you feel about evil characters?
In terms of cohesion with the party or in general?
In general, although I think party cohesion would be, ain't that the thing, right?
So, like, we've had, in my Tuesday games, we've had a player who ran an evil character. It was like a neutral evil or a lot like an evil. It was like, it wasn't full-blown evil. And then I actually found the XP calculator we use on our server. I can go tell you up. But it was weak. He made it known that he was an evil character. And the established agreement between players in him were, and DM, were the character's going to have his objective. He's going to have his ways of doing things, his roleplay, his the way he answers, the way he did things, how he dealt with certain. But what he couldn't do was he could not, or they could not, intentionally do it to harm the party.
Yeah, I know.
And that kept it in check to the point like it needed to be, because the ideals might be, because of course when you have a paladin in there, it's just everything, all hell breaks loose.
Well, that's just the thing. I mean, the whole point of having an evil character in a good party and making it work is the fact that you're all working together.
Yeah.
Because I know in my experience, good has this backing of, like, selflessness.
Yep.
While evil is all about being selfish. And so you can be lawful evil, but you're doing it for you. That's what makes it evil.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they have big bads who are evil to the point of view of communities, but they themselves are doing it selflessly. They're like someone like Thanos.
Yeah. Like, you kind of get it, but it's a dick move.
Yeah. And so I know in the past, and we've had evil characters, it's been an evil person shows up and essentially says, I need these morons.
Yeah.
Like, these morons have to live for me to do the thing I want to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works. I know one time there was a gentleman who played an evil paladin, and every time they would loot a dungeon, he would claim it.
Okay.
And the party never really cared because they were done with it, and the dungeon was cleared, and he would put up a new lock on the door and say, this is mine now. And by the time they were done, he had made a fairly large claim of estate, but I think the intention would be is that after a few levels, that character would have to be retired and become probably an evil NPC.
Yep.
Because now they have all this stuff and all this land and all this whatever. And that's kind of the thing where, like, I feel like I don't know if an evil character can be sustainable.
It's maybe difficult.
I can't imagine it. I mean, unless you're really petty evil. Like, you're evil in, like, the stupidest way.
Our evil character was a goblin wizard necromancer. So, I mean, you want to play on morals with the paladin, and anybody that had a good alignment made that complicated, because he always, like, he never tried to hurt the party. He was kind of like a little absent-minded type character who basically forgot who he was half the time. Every time he would raise the dead and to summon skeletons to help fight for him.
Yeah.
Everybody who's good aligned is like, oh my god, skeleton, kill it. And it's like, stop. Stop attacking me. Like, this is not, I'm in your group. I'm working with you. Like, it was a constant back and
forth. Yeah.
We also had a couple of players who didn't really understand. Like, the last time they played was the original D&D back in,
I was just going to say, like, it is kind of old school. Yeah.
It just turned into too much.
Yeah.
There's a lot of communication between players in that aspect, though. Like, if you are running an evil character, like, let the party know ahead of time. He is evil, but it's for personal gain and not to harm the party.
Yeah.
He may question certain ways of doing things and offer a suggestion, but it's never going to be, and it unless it's an evil campaign, it's extremely hard to acquire. I will.
You know, the funny thing is people talk about evil campaigns. I know very few people who've actually done them. And I feel like the big issue with an evil campaign is that it's so hard to be evil without that selflessness that having a party of totally evil characters is just doomed to failure in the same way that, like, think of every comic book you've ever read that has a bunch of bad guys working together. The downfall is always the same. It's a bunch of evil characters. It's hard to get them to mesh. What's your favorite game that isn't D&D?
Does it have to be tabletop or like anything?
Anything.
My fallback, like with video games, I would have to say Red Dead Redemption 2.
All right, it's a pretty good game.
I mean, I got into Baldur's Gate for a while. I'm still into it, but I just haven't had the time. But I mean,
I have mixed feelings about Baldur's Gate because I feel like I played D&D and then I'm like, all right, time to play D&D again.
Yeah, right. So my friend and I, we share a library on Xbox. He just got Dragon's Dogma 2.
Mm.
So I've been playing that. I've probably played maybe an hour so far. So with vacation coming up this week, we're going to put some time into that one. just to see how it is. So far, I'm liking it. It reminds me very much of like Elden Ring.
All right. Why?
Just the playstyle, like the casting and stuff like that. I'm playing a mage. So I haven't really played a lot with things. It's kind of still in just outside of tutorial mode right now.
Yeah.
But I can definitely have more to talk about probably by the end of tomorrow. Assassin's Creed Valhalla. That was a big one for me.
Mm.
I just like the story, like if Vikings are cool. If I had to give a top game outside of D&D, I don't play it anymore. As a friend of mine put, I had asked him, I go, do you still play WoW? He goes, no, I'm clean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's like that was a big part. I loved it. I think I can't remember what expansion I stopped, but like that, I still read the books. I still draw inspiration there. So WoW is definitely in my top, like it'll forever be in my heart type of thing. So.
And hey, if you ever need a character name, I'm sure you've seen a few.
Oh, yeah. There's, the character, the random name generators and all that. Me and them are friends. I use them all the time.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for spending the time.
Hey, it's been anytime. A good
while of chatting and all this other stuff. No, I appreciate it.
I would happily do this again. This was fun. This was great. Thank you for having me.
Sweet. Happy I could sneak you in, even though we had to go back and forth like 9 times because we both have either nothing or everything going on.
It happens.
Yeah. All right. Hey, I'll see you around.
Yeah. Well, if you ever need DM to talk to, I'm here.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks, man.
Anytime.
Bye.
Bye.